Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
What's up? What's going on? Sorry, I'm out of it.
Dude, you are very lazy after Thanksgiving. You've been on vacation.
It's all that tryptophan.
Yeah, you've been turkeying it up.
I ate out a turkey.
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was fun. It was. I spent it in Hawaii.
Dude,
getting
you
losing
poor
my voice.
Guy, it's must
horrible.
Be tough.
So rough.
Being a badass.
It's so rough. So rough.
So the weather was good.
Yeah, it was nice.
The
nice.
Beaches.
I guess
beaches
I've never been to Hawaii
sweet.
Before.
So that was your first time? That was your first time being late?
My first time in Hawaii. Probably the last, because I don't have that kind of money.
Dude, Hawaii is awesome. And you know what? You actually went like in a prime time of the year. Like October to January or February, it's like one of the best times to go, only because you miss all the weather from wherever.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we live in SoCal, so the weather ain't so bad here.
It's the same. But like I said, last time I'll probably ever go to Hawaii.
But you liked it.
It was nice. It wasn't bad.
You no look complaints. Almost like you have a cheerier
I'm
disposition.
Like, I wasn't like one of those lifelong people like, I want to go to Hawaii. Like my wife was like, I just want to go to Hawaii. That's all I ever wanted to do.
Just once.
But I was never like, because like, I could take or leave Hawaii. Like,
but it's pretty. It's a pretty place.
I enjoyed myself while I was there, but had I never gone there, it's not like a huge regret I would have had.
So is there a place on the world in the world that you would regret if you never went?
I don't think so.
Never?
No.
For me, I'd say Brazil or Thailand. If I don't at least hit that sometime in my life, I'd be a little
bummed. I'm good if I never go to Thailand.
Okay. Well, there you go.
I'm good.
You don't want any Bangkok?
No. I've had enough Bangkok.
Did you have like a traditional like Thanksgiving meal?
No, because it's so crowded there this time of year. Like there's so many people going there for the holidays.
So you had spam?
We had
spam and stuff?
No, we had to, we stayed at the Alani, which is the Disney resort. And they had all reservations were taken for dinner, so we had to have like a lunch, like a Thanksgiving lunch.
Okay.
And it was, because it's Alani and it's Hawaii, it's not like it's turkey and stuff, it's like ahi and like...
Wow, that was your Thanksgiving meal?
No, my Thanksgiving meal, because I don't like ahi, it was a hamburger.
Oh. You were like, hamburger. Can I get something else?
Yeah. Can I have the kids menu?
Wait, so why did they not serve turkey? Because it's an island?
It just wasn't like, it's not part of what their menu was.
Probably because they were like, how are we going to get so many turkeys over to Hawaii?
Exactly. Hawaii.
Hawaii. Did you see like any kind of like hula dancing?
Yeah, we went to a luau.
Nice. Did you eat poi?
No.
What? You went all the way to Hawaii? You're not missing much. It's like the shittiest stuff on the planet.
They seem to joke about it a lot.
Yeah, it tastes like wallpaper glue. Like literally.
Then
like,
why would people eat it?
I don't know. It's like a tradition. But you got to try at least try it
I'm
because
good.
It's like
don't
then you can
it.
Share in the no. camaraderie
I'll,
of how
I'll miss out on that
is.
Joke the rest of my life.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right. Did you have any pig?
No.
What kind of luau
well,
did you have?
There's
no
luau.
Poi,
they,
no pig.
They had the luau where they had the pig and the ground. You know, they cooked the pig traditionally. And then they have everyone sit around. They watch you. You watch them take the pig out of the ground.
Right.
And then parade it around.
Right.
And then you go get in line. And it's just like pork in like a buffet tray. Like it's just like. It was
well,
like
yeah.
A, it was
you're
like
not
a show
see.
Pig. It was a show pig in the ground. And then the pork that we ate.
You think
from,
it was real?
From like a catering person. So I'm like, it's not the same pig. So I'm like, I don't really have to eat.
So you didn't really go to a luau then?
Did you get
like a
as much of a luau as you can go to, I guess, there.
So would you go back?
No, I don't really care about going back.
I remember when my brother and I were kids, my favorite beach, I was telling you off the air, is Makapu. And when we were kids, when you're like 10 years old and you see a beach called Makapu that's spelled like
giggle the whole
Makapu,
time.
You know?
You could giggle like, at every single word in Hawaii.
Yeah, exactly.
Every sort is Hawaii or poo. So if you're like 8, it's the most hilarious
place. Did you see any volcanoes or anything?
Nothing active. No, because we're on Oahu. I don't think there's anything active.
Well, Diamond Head, well, that's not active though, right?
Yeah, Diamond Head's not. active.
Well, that's good. You got you seem like a little happy.
Went to Pearl Harbor, which was awesome.
That must have been awesome.
And I was trying to explain to my six-year-old what Pearl Harbor was. You know, World War II and how we... And
what did he say? He's like, what?
Well, he was very confused about, like, what a war was. Like, war and then, like... Because we went to the museum, we saw these pictures of, like, the battles. And, you like, I'd explain to him that we had went to war with the Japanese and... We had disagreements. We went to war or whatever, and they attacked us.
Does he hate Japanese people now?
Well, it's weird. He doesn't hate because I was trying to explain. And we hiked up Diamond Head, which is an old military embankment.
Right.
They had cannons up there or artillery to shoot any Japanese ships that were coming towards Hawaii. And so we're up there, and like Hawaii is a huge tourist destination for Japanese.
Yeah.
So we're up there.
Actually, isn't that ironic? It's like one of their favorite places to go.
They won there. They didn't lose in Pearl Harbor. They pretty much won that one.
You think they're trying to rub it in our faces?
We're up there and with like there's like 30 other Japanese people on top of this thing, and we're all looking out, and you see the gun embankments that used to be there. And I'm just explaining to Cole, yeah, this is where the artillery guns were during the war. And he's like, is this where we shot the Japanese? Like as loud as he could be.
Oh my God, really?
And they're just like surrounded by Japanese people.
And you're like,
I'm like, stop it, stop it.
Did you see the movie? I remember that's where I got most of my info at Pearl Harbor. It was like,
no.
Damn.
I saw the movie, but I knew more about.
Well, that's because you're an adult. I went there as a kid, and I was just like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
So
there's a lot of rumors that we actually knew about Pearl Harbor before it happened. You know
that? Yeah, there was some stuff.
You didn't talk about that with anybody?
Not, to who? My six-year-old? About conspiracy theories? Yeah, what about
Tracy? What about Tracy?
No.
Come on. Well, you had a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it was fun.
I had a lot of family in town. We had some pilgrims. We had some Indians. We had a lot of feasting, a lot of napping, a lot of pie for breakfast. Gotta love pie for breakfast.
Cold turkey and pie.
Leftovers. That's the one thing you didn't get. You didn't get leftovers.
I know. It's the first Thanksgiving I never had turkey.
And you probably were like, damn it.
Yeah. No, I like being home for Thanksgiving. I don't like going away for Thanksgiving.
Okay, you know what? Welcome back.
That's the one holiday
our studio audience loves you. Oh, look at that. He's back, ladies and gentlemen.
As soon as my voice comes back, it'll be perfect.
Well, it's okay. You know what? We won't fault you. But, you know. Looks like our special guest has arrived. Bass extraordinaire, producer, fantastic musician, Jesse Stern. Say hello.
Hey, guys.
What's up?
Oh!
Thanks.
They love him right away. How have you been, man?
Man, I've been great. How about you?
I've been good. You enjoying our radio show so far?
I am.
The it banter, almost sounds like the NPR. Eddie's got a very NPR voice.
Right now I do.
How y'all doing? Anyways, Jesse... You are one of the most talented musicians I know. You are one of the best bassists that I've ever played with.
Oh, shucks.
I want to know, you know, one of the fun things about doing this radio show is I get to interview friends. I get to interview people that I admire and respect.
Well, thanks
so
for
let's
having
start,
me.
Of course, let's start from the beginning. How did you get into music? Why did you get into music? And what did it all do for your life?
Well, I grew up in a really pretty isolated place just out in rural Washington State, and there really wasn't anything to do. You know, everybody was, you know, driving distance away, and you know, as a kid, I didn't have a car, so life was pretty boring. I got
you
in
had
trouble.
Fireworks.
We had fireworks. Yeah, we had fireworks
and math.
What we did for fun is like we would go down to the local fire station, which was the only flat little piece of parking lot. And we would set our skateboards on fire with gasoline and ride them around.
That sounds awesome. When did that stop?
So, how is that boring?
So I would get in, you know, and those kinds of shenanigans got me in trouble at school a lot, too. So,
because you were an arson?
Yeah, well, I mean, arson, you know, creativity, come on. It's just semantics.
But, you should go back to arson, man. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you know, I got to kind of... channel all of this creativity, you know, I asked for a bass. And
well, how did you ask for a bass? Like, how did you know you wanted to play?
Well, I've been a musician since I was a kid, as you know, learning guitar and learning piano from my stepdad, who's a very enthusiastic semi-professional musician. And when I got really serious about music, I decided I wanted to play bass. And, you know, basically it was a lot of kind of difficult conversations with school counselors and stuff. And finally,
Finally, because you were lighting things on fire.
Yeah,
like, Jesse, we need to find you something.
Pretty much, you need a creative outlet.
Something flame retardant.
And what's that creative outlet going to be? I said, well, you know, either a motorcycle. My mom said, you're not getting a motorcycle. Like, and damn. I said, or a bass. Okay, so my stepdad, who was, you know, connected in the local
music. Did you know you wouldn't get the motorcycle?
Yeah. That's why you asked for it? I knew right away.
You knew, like, I'll say motorcycle, and then whatever else I ask for, I know I'll definitely get.
See, my mom pretty much had it tattooed on my chest. You're not getting a motorcycle.
But you had the fire elements, and then you would have had the motorcycle element. I mean, it's kind of like maybe an ulterior
It could have been a completely different career path for me.
Hell rider.
That's awesome. So what was the – did you listen to music a lot and you were like, I want to learn to play this stuff? Was there something that triggered it? There's always something with musicians.
What it really was is that all the kids at school played guitar. Everybody played guitar. And I've always wanted to be different, and always liked kind of going a little bit away from the, you know, the path that everybody else is taking.
Right.
So I pretty much decided I wanted to play bass. I wanted to do some kind of rock instrument, and, you know, guitar was too obvious.
Like,
so.
You guys have six strings. Yeah, come we on. Have four.
Everybody's
come
playing
on.
Guitar. I'm going to do something different. I'm going to play the bass. And it's, you know, that was, it turns out, a really good decision.
Well, you're a badass musician. I mean, you're on a different level than most musicians that I know and I see and I play with all the time. And that's why I wanted to get you in here because, man, your story is fascinating now more than anything because of how accomplished you are. But these details are the things that I've never – you know, I've been playing with you maybe for, what, 5 or 6 years?
Yeah.
Maybe more than that now. And I've never known that you were a troubled kid lighting skateboards on fire.
Yeah. The bass has mostly kept me out of trouble ever since.
That's
then.
Good.
But, you know, I got the bass – my first – for a while, my stepdad borrowed a bass from a friend of his and – you know, I used that, and then eventually we got my own bass, which
did you have like a jazz school. Band at school or something that you could get into?
I joined the jazz choir as the bass player.
That's awesome.
That's how I learned to read music.
And pick up chicks.
They said, yeah, we got to go to, you know, the state competitions and stay in hotels and all of that. But that's how I learned how to read music. I mean, on the bass, I had some understanding of reading music from learning piano as a kid, but... you know, basically it was all these written out walking bass lines. And I just took each, you know, I was a really bad reader at the time. So I just went, you know, bar by bar. Okay, here's this.
This is me.
Memorize that measure. Go on to the next one. Memorize that. It took me hours just to, but I had to memorize all of it because I wasn't a good reader, so that's how I got.
You were
into
a bullshitter. You could say it. You
were
a bullshitter.
I schmoozed my way into my first gig at the high school jazz choir.
What kind of stuff were you doing? Were you doing like gospel stuff? Were you doing?
It was real,
like show choir stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty cheesy stuff at the time, like, you know, high school arrangements of kind of, you know.
Did you have to pretend like you were way into it? I've done some gigs where it's like I have to pretend like I'm like rocking out, but I'm like, God, this is bad.
Yeah.
You know, I know you know that. There's times where every musician has to do that. You have to pretend like.
You got to do that on the music video.
We won't say a word.
Okay. No, everybody's really playing on the music video.
So when did you start taking it seriously?
It was actually around the time when I started playing bass that I decided this is going to be my career.
Your thing.
Yeah.
How old were you when you like really knew
13.
That?
13.
Man. So you knew what you wanted to do at 13.
Yeah, yeah. And,
damn.
You know, I started, you know, I played, you know, everything that I could get my hand, you know, I played along with Iron Maiden albums, Metallica. Right. Those were kind of my heroes at the time, but I also played along with...
That's you're speaking Eddie's language big time.
I also learned, you know, Aston Family Man Barrett.
I did. I want to light something on fire right now.
There's a table here.
Yeah, don't light this plastic table that we have.
I started learning the bass lines of my heroes, Aston Family Man Barrett from Bob Marley and the Wailers, Michel Ndege Ocello, Sting was one of my big early...
Dude, you're speaking my language, man. That's all the stuff I still love.
And James Jamerson, of course.
All the Motown stuff.
I'm still figuring him out.
I feel like some of those great players, especially bass players, like... I'm still catching up with some of those ideas because sometimes they come up like bass players. I honestly think, and I'm not just saying this because you're here, but bass to me, I'm going to give Eddie a little tutorial. Bass to me is the most important instrument in a band. It is the only instrument that is like the rhythm of the band, but it's also melodic. So drums are never going to be melodic. We just know it's the beat. But bass is the one instrument that is, it marries the two. So it's like, I always judge a band by a bass player, and like, you know, bass players, for the most part, sometimes they get overlooked, and yet they're the most important part of a band. Like, that's what keeps everything together. So, like, I can't imagine, like, guys like the people that you mentioned. And you didn't mention, like, Jaco Pastorius, any of those guys. But
who I also love and studied.
I can tell because I can hear them playing. But, yeah. But you know, even some of those, really some of those towards. Simple, like reggae bass lines, mm-hmm. or some of those old school Motown lines that are like the hooks of famous songs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, it's amazing that they just came up with something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they just came up with something on the spot that it's like a major hook of a song. Yeah, and then absolutely. It just lives on endlessly. And they just came up with it mm-hmm. like in a snap. So it's like.
Since you mentioned that, I think that's what they all those players have in common, is they have these really hooky, melodic bass lines.
And the crazy thing about bass players is, like, you know, at first I used to be like, bass players only need to know, like, the chords. They don't need to know if it's major or minor. But good bass players have to know everything, because it's like they won't just hit the root of every chord every time. You know what I mean? So it's like, I understand that. I don't know if you have, do you ever have a fascination with piano? I know a lot of bassists that have a fascination with piano because of that knowledge of music. Like, they just know inversions of things, or like the way they see mm-hmm. bass lines, or in a work of music, mm-hmm. they gravitate towards the piano because it's like kind of like how they see music in their heads.
Yeah, you know? I definitely notice what the piano player is doing whenever I'm playing with, you know, somebody on the keys. Oh, yeah, that.
You just inspired a little question. Like, okay, so let's say you're playing with a drummer. You're playing with a band, mm-hmm. all right? Tell me what you're paying attention to.
I mean, everything. I mean, I'm always sort of... I like to lock in with the drums, but I also like to lock in with my own feel. And that can... If I'm with a good drummer, I can kind of pretty much put my own feel onto it, and it won't pull them, and we kind of create this. It's less of like a you know, I'm following that person, and more like we're kind of
doing something together,
which is really fun. But I mean, I pay attention to everything as much as possible. You know, every instrument that's playing, what I'm thinking about or not thinking about. You know, my relaxation. You know, just communicating with the audience.
How cool you look playing the bass. Does that ever enter into your head, how cool you look when you're playing the bass?
Well, I don't know if I really look that cool.
Every bass player looks cool.
I've seen people sort of imitate what I do when I'm playing the bass, and I think, oh my God, is that what I do?
Every bass player makes some weird face.
Yeah.
It happens. I think all musicians make a face where it looks like
It's like, for some reason, with bass players, it's like the most
absurd. Let me see your bass face.
They call it bass face. Yeah.
You need to pick up the bass so we can know, the world can know your bass face.
It kind of looks like you're.
It's kind of it's just trying to do a Robert De Niro impression. Yeah, that's basically this.
Yeah. It's kind of like you're trying to hold in a fart while sucking on a lemon. It's sort of like.
But you know what? It's very true. It's like you smell something stinky.
Yeah.
But you're also proud of it. you know,
it's just like, kind of like, that was a good one. I don't want anyone else to smell this, but that was a good one. That sort of thing.
That's very true. I like that analogy. That's perfect. Like that. Never thought about that, but you know what?
Whenever I see a band, I always look at the bass player. Because they're the most entertaining musician to watch usually.
And they're holding it all together while giving you the stink face.
Yeah,
and back to what you were saying about, you know, holding it together, if somebody comes up to the band afterwards and compliments the guitar player, I always say thank you and you're welcome.
You're like, you needed me. You needed me to do that.
Compliment the singer, you're welcome.
No, but you know what? It's really true. I'll tell you, if I have like different players coming in, I always notice when every player is not hitting parts, but man, bass players make the biggest difference to me. It's the time, it's the groove, it's the parts, and like every time you've come and played with NK Band, your feel, your vibe, and your attention to detail for my music is like pretty detail oriented. And man, this guy will come into rehearsal and he'll he'll point out like, hey, Ray, I think you're hitting a major chord on that, you know, and it should be a minor. Like, he'll call out players that have been
there. There's a big fight.
And then it's like, shut up. Yeah, you're right. You know, like, he'll pull that. And I'm like, dude, you are a badass. Or he'll just have his shit all dialed in. Like, everything's charted out. Everything's just, like, meticulous. Like, it's just perfect.
That's why nobody likes me.
Not this guy again.
You were that kid in the jazz band. You're like, dude, this kid's showing off, man. Well, let's get to something there. Like, what are you gonna play us first?
Well, what do you want to hear first? I have something of mine. Something that I kind of co-did, and then something that I just played on.
I'm going to let Eddie choose.
What do you want to hear first?
The co-did thing.
Oh, the thing
you co-did.
The co-did.
All right. So this is
I like the way you said it.
This is a kind of a Latin rock band that I work with called Cinco Santos. And so
five something?
Five saints.
Five saints.
So we did
our... Very good, Eddie.
I know my number is up to 10.
Nice. Very good. So we did our first album recently, and it's been getting some airplay in South America and in Mexico on Ache TV and you know around.
What's Ache TV? Tell us.
It's TV with music on it.
All right, it sounds exciting.
So
even the way you say it, it's got a little extra.
There you go. So I played bass on this. I co-wrote the song. I
co-did. You
co-produced it. You co-did. I co-did all of this.
Okay.
Pausas me sujetan firmemente. Me sujeta por el cuello y me lleva a la cocina y la escucho respirar. La escucho.
Candela,
lo que me falta pa' quererte bien.
Candela,
ay, candela,
candela, por quererte bien, por quererte bien, por quererte bien.
Yeah, that's some funky shit. I was grooving.
Thanks, audience. They're clapping.
They don't want to stop.
They don't want to stop. Take another bow, like, Jesse. Eddie, did you have your bass face while you're listening to that?
Co-did all that.
Dude, amazing. First of all, your pocket is so ridiculously awesome.
Thanks.
Dude, and I love that, like, let's talk about the arrangement real quick. Tell me about your perspective on how you came up with that line and what was the arrangement in your kind of vision.
I mean, it was kind of about pulling in some different elements. I mean, I'm not going to say that I arranged the song, but I made a lot of suggestions for the guitar parts, and you know, we all worked together to kind of create things that were parts that created a nice conversation where, you know, the guitars are all doing some cool lines that interact with each other,
right,
and the bass interacts with the guitar parts.
Well, it's almost like the guitar is kind of almost doing like a Montuno, but it's also doing like a funky guitar part. That's what I loved about it.
Yeah.
Like, but your part, the cool thing is, like, throughout every section, you're just playing the same groove, and it's just like the steam train. It's just like, I'm just going to run this down all the way to the end. And then you throw in like maybe two bars of a crazy lick that was so tasty. It's like, I have to ask you, you have a lot of facility on the bass. How do you not just play every note under the sun when you can and just play that groove? Like, I mean, you do it so, that's like super pro. But like, man, I've heard you play when you do a solo and it is just like off the chain. And how do you hold yourself back? How is that restraint for you to just not play everything?
I mean, to me, it's really rewarding to play with discipline. One of the things that I do every day is I play, you know, I'll just pick some groove, some random and usually simple groove. Maybe it's just eighth notes, or maybe it's some kind of, you know, Bootsy Collins, little two-bar James Brown lick, or, you know, maybe it's a Montuno, a tumbao pattern.
That's Latin for you, Eddie.
I don't know.
So, no idea. And I'll just play that without changing for 20 minutes. And it has this, it's almost like a meditation. I mean, it's almost like it kind of wakes me up in the morning to do that. And it relaxes my body. And so the reward for playing, for just laying in a groove is so huge that, you know, I almost don't want to step out of that.
You know, I share that with playing rhythm guitar, and my favorite moments being in a band is when I can just lock in with the bass player and the drummer.
Yeah,
because there's just like this. It's like all three of us are doing this thing where it's just like,
yeah. And you have a great pocket on the guitar,
and I love that feeling of just. But it's about the bass and the drummer. Like, they have to just lock in, and when you play with great players like yourself, it's like you can just sit on that all day. It's like, I don't want to play as much stuff. It's like what you said, but you hit it right on the head with the meditation. It's like you just get into this, like, it's almost like hypnotizing.
Yeah, and if you know, you start out playing, you know, playing something, and, you know, okay, it sounds fine, I can play this, it's easy, whatever. And, you know, I'll do this with a click that's on, you know, like at 40 beats per minute on the backbeat, so the click is playing like a snare drum, you know,
three,
four, kind of thing. And after, you know, 5 minutes, I start to kind of relax into it. And after 10 minutes, I start to get kind of, you know, excited about what I'm doing, even though it's just the same thing. It's sort of noticing how your own response to the music changes.
It's also like a mental thing, too. Yeah. It's like you just get captivated with...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you feel like that with comedy, too, Eddie. Like, you just get in a zone where it's like almost things are just coming out. Like, maybe you don't... Like, you know what's coming, but it's just like, it just feel things out.
What's that, when you get that thing where you're sort of not, you're kind of on autopilot, but not really, because you're kind of having the inner monologue with yourself while you're doing what you're doing.
But it's flowing. It's just flowing. Like, we always talk about music and comedy having this, like, relationship, and It's like you're feeling your dialect is with the audience constantly.
Yeah.
Whereas musicians have that with each other and with the audience in a different way. But like those are my favorite moments where it's like you can kind of take in the moment. Yeah. You know, you're not working, but you're creating this thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like bass players get that the most.
Yeah.
Because it's like it's not this showy thing or this big like drum solo or something. You're just always in that place where it's like you always get to tap into that,
which is
awesome.
Yeah, it's about the feel and the vibration. And yeah, and that meditation or that, you know, just playing the same groove for 20 minutes, after, you know, 15 minutes or something, the groove just gets to this whole nother level of pocket that
it's exciting.
That lasts for the rest of the day.
But not a lot of musicians like that kind of, like they want the glory, whereas like that's like the meat and potatoes right there. Yeah. You know what I mean? They want the cake without the meat and potatoes. And I'm like, no. Give me the meat and potatoes. You play with some pretty heavy cats. Let's talk about that for a second. So I know you've been playing with Sly and the Family Stone for a while, right?
Yeah, I did.
When did you do that? Let's talk about that.
From about late 2008 until early 2010, he did kind of a series of shows, mostly around LA. And it was right before the big Coachella fiasco.
I was there for that, where he just like didn't show up, right? Yeah. I'm sure he's done that. Like, he's shown up and just not shown up at gigs, right?
When I was playing with him, he showed up for every gig.
Wow.
And I got paid for every gig.
Wow. And did he have the white mohawk then when you played with him?
Let's see. He had, it was kind of more reddish.
Man, that's okay, first of all, let's talk about this for a second. Sly Stone is like one of the heaviest musicians for funk soul music,
mm-hmm.
right? And not to bring up lines, but you're a white bass player. Like, that says so much about your playing for him to be like, dude, you are the bass player in my band. You had to be like, man, maybe I'm not white after all. Like, you had to be like, damn, I got some soul, man. I got some soul power.
I mean, part of Sly's thing from the very beginning was working with integrated bands. I mean, he's been doing that since the very beginning. And that's kind of part of his life.
I didn't know that.
Philosophy. Yeah. And but he actually did say at our first show, you know, we rehearsed with the band and he wasn't there. And the first show he introduced everybody and he said, you know, I didn't get a chance to meet anybody before this show because I didn't show up to any of the rehearsals, you know, and everybody laughed. He kind of chuckled and everybody laughed.
And, how do you do that?
He said, but the musical director would send me tapes every night and, you know, so I could hear it and hear what was going on. And he said, and I thought this boy was the N-word.
Nicky?
The way that he plays this bass.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, he meant that as a compliment.
Compliment,
and,
right, right.
And, you know,
up, you're like, hey, man, I'm from Washington.
He was laughing about it, but that was a really nice.
Wait, so you got to talk about that for a second. So you did rehearsals without him there?
Mm-hmm, at first.
And then you just recorded them, and then he just showed up on the day of the performance, and you're like,
yeah,
this is how we're going to do this.
Yeah, and then we did everything completely different than what we did in rehearsal.
I can tell you're amazed. You have a question. You must have something.
That's just crazy.
Not showing up to your
own
rehearsal.
That's insane. Like, what was he doing that he couldn't come to rehearsal? Or he just didn't want to go to rehearsal?
I think he just, you know.
Like, screw it.
He's Sly Stone.
Yeah.
I mean, he's Sly Stone. He's like, they'll figure it out. I mean, there's moments where Chuck Berry, he never used to have the same band. He'd show up to the venue, and in his contract, he'd say, get me a band. And so he'd be like, all right, you guys ready to play? Like, what? I could never do that and know that it's the best of what I'm doing, which is crazy.
Yeah, but Chuck Berry knew that they were there to see Chuck Berry.
Yeah, that's true. But then, you know what, real quick, I went and saw Chuck Berry, and he's not even playing in the same key as the band sometimes. Yeah, so it's like, maybe.
Yeah, but you get to the point where you're an icon for 50 years.
Yeah, that's true.
You're allowed. You're not even thinking about other things. You're just like, Chuck Berry.
Let me just give me
a guitar.
$70,000.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna
play this.
Take a bath.
You're not
after
trying
this.
Anymore
pretty
at
much,
that point.
Pretty much.
You don't
That's
try
true.
Anymore at that
That's
point.
That's true.
You're just
That's
like
true.
I'm gonna show up.
Do my thing.
Do your thing. Go home.
Well, that's a huge testament to your playing. I mean, honestly, you like. Now Jesse knows I play a lot of African music. This is how we first met. We met through another drummer,
mm-hmm.
friend of ours, and And Shay, I remember, was like, dude, Shay knew my music. He's played in the band a couple times. And he was like, this is your guy for African music. And I was like, really? And you were like, you started singing me bass lines. I was like, this guy knows his shit. So you came in and, like, you know, that's not a bag that everybody can do. Like, people can do pop. People can do rock. People can even do reggae. But, like, for me, the true test for a bass player is African music. Mm. And he came in and just slayed. Like, he had all the soukous lines and all these, like, he did his homework, but he knew, he added things that were very stylistic of the styles we were playing, and characteristic of the styles we were playing. And it's just like, man, how did you get into that music? Like, what triggered that for you as a bass player?
There was this guitar player up in Seattle who I heard him play when I was probably 19, and I called him every week for about 5 years saying, I want to play with you. And finally he called me back, and I started playing with him, and it was soukous music.
Wow.
And, there's an interesting story there, which gets back to the groove and the feel. He would say, you know, he didn't let me play a fill for about 3 years.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. He said, okay, just play this line. Don't change. Don't change anything. You know, here's the line. Boom. Boom, 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 boom. And so
I was so tight.
So I'd play that, you know, whatever the line was. Don't change. No fills. Nothing. And I took it seriously because I, you know, I really respected this guy, and I loved the way that he played guitar. So I, you know, after a few years of that, we're sitting there having coffee, and he said, okay, so when you really feel the music, you can do this. In soukous, you do this little fill. It's called revving. And, you know, you're playing the bass. You just put a little bit of extra rhythm.
A little bit extra rhythm.
But only when you really feel it. I said, okay. So that night on the gig, where, you know, we're playing, I'm starting to really feel it. Okay, I'm playing the bass. I'm holding it back. I'm feeling it. And he looked over at me like, yeah, that's it. I said, oh, okay, cool. He liked it. I'm going to do it again. And he walked over to me on the stage and got right in my face playing the guitar. And he said, play the groove, motherfucker.
That is awesome.
So, you know,
that's how you learn, though. That's how you learn. You're like, I'm going to push it to 11. Oh, no, don't do
that. Yeah, that taught me a lot. I mean, that experience taught me a lot about discipline. And,
right.
And then
and
the
groove.
The Sly gig taught me a lot, a whole nother level of, you know, pocket in terms of the funk and the one that a lot of these old school funk guys are always talking about, the one. It's all about the one. And I understood that.
Now you're like,
Sly.
I get it.
And what, really
what's all, what's
crazy
all about
thing
the
about
one?
Dynamics.
What does that mean?
You go, bah! And then you do whatever you want.
Yeah. As long as one is on,
bah!
You can do anything else.
Got it.
And actually, that's how I produce a lot of stuff like that. Like, I'll make sure the one is on the groove, mm-hmm. and then there's a little bit of movement. Like, you can, the beat, like, people can rush or kind of, you know, push and pull a little bit. As long as that one is on the money.
Yeah. And we did some things with George Clinton too, and George brought that to another level, making it dynamic. So you're going whatever the bass, you know, bah, bah. So this extreme dynamic thing was happening, and it, you know, when you have, you know, six people doing that together, it takes kind of the concept of
and
of
now to rush it to
a whole different level.
So was George Clinton first, or did you do Sly first?
It was Sly, and, you know, George would kind of show up.
Dude, but that's crazy that you're playing. Those are, like, two of the greatest funk soul legends.
Yeah. And
it's like you could pretty much be like, done. Yeah. I've got the soul funk thing down.
Yeah, Heroes, I learned a lot from them, and it was, you know, really, really, and great, great band.
Yeah, they're not slackers. They're all right.
Fun. Yeah.
Let's play something else. What are you going to play us next?
What do you want to hear next? How about
you're on a roll.
There was one thing that we pulled down from the Dropbox. Is that, do you have that?
I don't see it.
Uh-oh.
Unless it's on SoundCloud?
We can grab it on Spotify.
Spotify?
Maybe we'll even get an ad.
Yes.
like that.
Looks like my sound effects work whether they're plugged in or not, Eddie. Yeah. So, while Jesse's looking for that, Eddie, you have the makings of a bass face. Here it comes. What are you playing?
Uh-oh, if I can even do it on this app.
Boing.
Boing. Do it. Do it.
This isn't going to work.
Do it, bro.
Technical difficulties.
That's okay. It's okay. You're worth the wait, Jesse. You're worth the wait.
But everyone has the expiration date.
What?
Everybody.
We're all going to die.
Everyone has.
Just kidding.
Everyone has an expiration date.
Eddie, you doing any stand-up anytime in January, in the new year?
I'll be in Tucson first week of January. No, January 8th.
That's a good time to be in 9th. Tucson. Very good job done.
Yeah, you know, so get your tickets. Plan accordingly. It's a 7-hour drive if you're in L.A.
Is it easier to pull something else up, Jesse?
Yeah, let's pull something else up.
All right, no problem.
What I was going to play is this cool track from Ed Roth's album. Do you know Ed?
Mm-mm.
Okay, well, he's a phenomenal keyboard player, and he did an album, cool instrumental album. He plays keys, Rhodes, Hammond B3. You know,
he's one of those guys.
And we did this. He did this album and one of the songs I played on with Chad Smith on drums.
Oh, nice.
And
Chad Smith from the Chili Peppers, man. Yeah.
Well, let's rock that one out before they kick us out of here.
No,
I don't know if I can get it on Spotify.
We'll find it. We'll find it. Here it comes.
Maybe. The problem is I have to shuffle play. Let's see if it pulls up the right song. No.
No, that's funky.
Okay, so I'll play
it's
something
like
else.
Musical chairs.
At this point, just play anything.
Here we go. I'll play one of
from
mine.
Anybody.
This is a song that that I wrote and produced and played all the instruments.
You
on.
Did all by yourself.
I did it all by myself, and it's for you know, an upcoming EP that I'm working on.
Well, he's breaking out.
Mm.
He's been playing bass with some of the greatest.
I've got a great title for your EP.
What is it?
Self did.
Co-did, self-did.
I'm going to take a note of that.
I would call that self-did.
Instead of co-did.
Self-did.
Maybe I'll do a compilation and call it self-dids and co-dids.
So, yeah. From the co-dids, this is my self-did.
Well, this is called Change Your Mind.
All I want to
Very nice. Oh, hold on just a sec. Cut off the band. Wow. Cut off the band. Dude, that's killing. You did all the parts. You did the vocals, the guitar solo. Self did. At its finest. Dude, you've also been playing with Jordan Sparks. Mm-hmm. You've been playing bass for all these heavies. So now you want to write your own stuff. You want to create your own records. Tell me about that transition. As a musician.
I mean, that's something that I've always done. I've always written songs. And it just kind of, I guess, recently has gotten to the point where I have sort of, where I feel like I have the skills and the gear to make it sound the way that I hear it in my head. And I never really did.
Jack, this is ridiculous. Why am I not doing this myself?
Right.
You're like, I'm playing for people that I know I can play. I'm just kidding.
Well, no, I mean, it's more like, you know, just...
No, it's in
you. I would create stuff, and you know, it just sounded crappy because I didn't, you know, I didn't really. When you do sort of everything yourself, mm-hmm. you know, you're limited by the thing that you do the worst.
Right. Yeah, that's so true. That's why you delegate.
Yeah.
You're like, let me find another me to play this part.
And that's another thing. I finally kind of learned how to do that, and how to collaborate, and how to, you know, how to work with other people. Which I wasn't very good at.
A little side note, I saw Jesse. I was like, my girlfriend loves Wife Swap. Was that the show, Wife uh-huh. Swap? And I'm sitting there, and she's watching this episode with Nia Peoples mm-hmm. and Tiffany. Mm-hmm. And they do like a swap. And all of a sudden, towards the end, I see she's like, Tiffany's like, oh, I'm going to do a session. I'm going to bring in my friend Jesse Stern. And I see Jesse Stern on TV, and I'm like, what? And he's just sitting there, like, running this session. You got, like, the reality Hollywood look. Like, yeah, man, sounds good. It's so awesome. So you're obviously playing with all these heavies, and then, you get that call, like, hey, all right, let's do this TV thing. And you know, like, sometimes it's not the most musically rich thing sometimes with those reality shows. You still had your game face on. The one thing I loved about seeing that, it's like, you were super professional while even doing something like that, that you may not be like, oh, my heart's in this reality TV thing, but you were like, I'm in it. I'm like, I'm going to do this. Like, I'm approaching this like a pro. It's like your attention to detail and your professionalism is, it's beyond, man.
You got to bloom where you're planted.
Yeah, that's true. I like that. I'm going to steal that line. You got to bloom where you're planted. Mm. Where'd you take that from?
I'd tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
So where can people find you, Jesse? Give us all your information.
JesseStern.com. JesseStern.com. I'm pretty easy to find on Instagram, Facebook. If you like videos of cats
he's cuddling,
you know, check out my Instagram.
There you go.
That's a part of it.
It's the Jesse Stern on Instagram. And you know, if anybody
call wants him to, for bass sessions.
If you want to call me for bass sessions.
Call him to be in your band. Call him to produce Facebook your next record. He is seriously one of the best musicians I know. And thank you for being on here. What are you going to play us out? What are you going to play? You're going to play us something.
I'll play you a brand new song.
I love it.
That I actually, last week, it's actually not even done, but I'll play it for you.
I love it. World debut.
World debut. Wow.
The premiere.
I woke up from a dream, and this song was in my head, so I recorded it.
Damn.
It's so new that I have to manually fade it at the end.
Nice. You're the master fader.
I try to meditate through this ADD. I can't sit still to watch TV. I'm crawling out of my own skin. Keep playing but don't seem to win. Anxiety has reached a peak. My stomach churns, my arms feel weak. It's hard to breathe, I'm turning blue. There's a hole in my chest shaped like you. 'Cause whenever you're around, your heart beating is the only sound I hear. Lost in myself, lost in myself,
lost in myself.
But just one silly thing persists. So many things won't fit through this hole in my chest shaped like you. 'Cause whenever you're around, your heartbeat is the only sound I hear.
That was
Jesse amazing. Stern. Dude, thank
that'll
you for being a
drop
guest.
Probably in a couple weeks.
Cool. Sounded awesome.
Sounds awesome.
All right, well, thanks for coming on the show.
And Eddie, thanks for making it back from Hawaii.
Hawaii. All right,
Jesse,
everybody.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks for
on
having
Flip
me,
Side.
Guys.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks for being our guest.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.